It's not just about watching the game. It's about betting on it. I'm Mike Valeni, and on Cash the Ticket, Jim Costa and I break down every college football and NFL matchup like it's the last game we're ever going to watch, from the best bets to the sneaky underdogs. And of course, as my co-host likes to say, the value. And the one thing we're not going to do is pretend we're professionals. We have fun with it. It's an entertainment product, and it makes watching games a hell of a lot of fun. So Cash the Ticket, follow it in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back, folks. We're joined by Guy Williams, President, Gulf Coast Bank and Trust. Guy, welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you. Good to be with you.
This is the meeting everyone has been waiting for, Wednesday, the Fed Open Markets Committee meeting, and they will decide how many basis points they will shave off the interest rates. Your thoughts?
Yeah, this is absolutely the one that we've all been talking about, and somebody's going to be right, somebody's going to be wrong. The discussion now, and it's really close to 50-50, is will it be 25 basis points or 50? You have some people getting involved who shouldn't, including Senator Warren writing a letter and saying, you know, they need to do 75. The Fed should be exempt from political influence, and I think largely they have been. But, yeah, for sure, on Wednesday, we'll see the first drop in rates. My best guess is 25, but who knows? Could easily be 50. There's some nervousness that if they do 50, it'll signal that they feel like the economy's in trouble, and 25 would be more steady as she goes. So, yeah, be very interesting to see what happens on Wednesday.
But shouldn't it be devoid of all of that? I mean, you know, what evidence does Elizabeth Warren bring forward to justify a 75 basis point cut?
Elizabeth Warren is one of those people that is often wrong but never uncertain. And, yeah, I would deeply discount almost everything she says economically. And it really is, it is improper for politicians to get involved with the Federal Reserve. And Jerome Powell's been very emphatic about that. He was asked, you know, what is the effect of politics? He said, we don't consider that. That's not something we do. We just don't do it. And that's really what it has to be, because politically, it's always going to be something that you'll want the Fed to do things that help your administration, regardless of the effects later on. And it would cause the world to lose confidence in our monetary system. So I think it was bad form to write the letter. Certainly, I don't think the Fed's going to pay attention to it, but it's just an indication of bad judgment that you'd even suggest that the Fed do a 75 basis point cut. For one thing, that would really signal that the Fed thought the market was, that the economy was in deep trouble and needed an instant shot of adrenaline. So that would, in my mind, be the worst possible thing you could do.
Obviously, because folks believe that this action that would be taken by the open market is actually good, an action that reflects that the economy's in a good shape, right? As opposed, and it's really the opposite effect. I don't know if I'm explaining this right, but or saying this correctly.
No, you are. A lot of times people get excited about Fed rate cuts and they say, gee, the Fed's cutting rates. And sometimes it's because there's weakness in the economy. In this case, the Fed had to deal with rapid inflation. You know, there was a tremendous amount of government spending, a tremendous amount of snapback in spending, a big deficit increase. And the Fed had to raise rates to slow inflation. So rates are higher than the normal rate and higher than sort of the neutral rate. There's a word that economists use that nobody else does, which is R-starred. And it is the normal non-inflationary, non-deflationary interest rate. And the interesting thing is you don't know what it is until you get there. It's sort of, yeah, we'll know what it looks like when we arrive. It doesn't stimulate the economy. It doesn't make the economy shrink. It's the neutral rate. And there's a lot of debate professionally on what that rate needs to be. A lot of, in the old days, typically the inflation rate would be 2 and the Fed funds rate would be 4. So So you think, okay, that's a neutral rate. That doesn't stimulate or shrink. And ideally, you want to see them get back to that neutral rate. But getting back, if you're at the neutral rate and go down, then it means that there is something wrong with the economy. When you're above the neutral rate, it means that inflation is coming down and you can safely come down a bit. And I think that's where we are right now.
And Elizabeth Warren's not the only politician that has opined. It's both sides of the aisle, right? Because a lot of times the action that's taken by the Fed may work contrary to what they believe the monetary policy should be, but what their belief is of no moment, that's what the Fed is charged with doing, right? They don't get it right all the time. No one does.
No, and I think this time they may have done a pretty good job. I've got to give them credit for potentially engineering the soft landing in the face of a lot of different global challenges. But realistically, almost every politician wants lower rates. Donald Trump wanted lower rates. George Bush wanted lower rates. Jimmy Carter wanted lower rates, and so did Bill Clinton and Joe Biden. So, you know, it's a normal predisposition if you're a politician and want rates to be lower, because then people have lower borrowing costs, lower mortgage costs. The Fed has to manage that, because if they let inflation get out of control, the results are disastrous for the economy. And that's really the Fed's fear, is that inflation expectations become, to use Jerome Powell's word, unmoored. And when people think there's just no end in sight to inflation, then lots of bad things occur. So I'd say the politicians are doing what they always do, you know, left, right, and center. They want lower rates. The Fed is doing a pretty good job of ignoring the politics. And I hope that they are indeed engineering the soft landing that really would be better for the economy for all of us.
Guy, there are a lot of people that there's big blame being placed all over. Some sectors have higher inflation rates than others. We've seen that in food prices, and now we have, you know, allegations of price gouging. I don't really necessarily believe that, but for the benefit of the listening audience, why is it that some sectors of the economy experience higher inflation than others?
Well, you have a giant diverse economy. We're incredibly fortunate to have the largest economy in the world, and each part of the economy has different inputs. And if you look at different commodities, they're subject to different things. You have crops like soybeans and wheat, and they're subject to weather. So depending on what the weather is, the soybean and wheat prices can go up or down. We also have some imports from foreign countries, and that makes a difference. So if you have a crop, you can end up with different inflation based upon weather or based on imports. Manufactured goods, it depends on what your labor costs are. If your labor costs are high, if you have a challenge getting skilled workers, your cost could go up. If you're constrained by supply, you can't get the necessary raw materials, your cost can go up. And so you have a lot of different pressures. In the technology sector, computing power has gone down for decades. You know, the amazing things that a computer can do today, in the old days, you'd have to spend millions of dollars to get that sort of computing power. So efficiency can make that prices go down sometimes. So it's a combination of inputs, labor, efficiency, and then external factors, you know, like weather, that all go together to result in the price of a good. And really, I just do not believe there's any price gouging in the food business. It's a very thin margin business. There are lots and lots of suppliers. The grocers are always looking for, you know, different vendors that give different prices. And, you know, we see that in New Orleans. You know, in addition to all of our great local groceries, you have the out-of-towners like the Aldis that are bringing in a discount model. So, you know, I think that's just an excuse when people are unhappy with the reality of where they are. But the cost of goods really is a complex input-based equation and the market economy does get to a fair price, far better than any other system.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Alo, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Alo, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
It's not just about watching the game. It's about betting on it. I'm Mike Valeni, and on Cash the Ticket, Jim Costa and I break down every college football and NFL matchup like it's the last game we're ever going to watch, from the best bets to the sneaky underdogs. And of course, as my co-host likes to say, the value. And the one thing we're not going to do is pretend we're professionals. We have fun with it. It's an entertainment product, and it makes watching games a hell of a lot of fun. So Cash the Ticket. Follow it in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Is one of the considerations for the open market committee on Wednesday when they meet this kind of wage, our wages as it relates to the inflation index and where we are? It seems as though, you know, that gap or that delta, I think, is maybe been reported as being as high as 3 to 4% at the present time. Your thoughts?
Yeah, but the wage situation is complex, and that's the one reason that the Fed will not leave rates the same, is they're seeing softening in the demand for labor. And the Bureau of Labor Statistics has botched the numbers, unfortunately, and they've had to revise them down pretty significantly. So it means the labor market is weaker than was originally forecast. And you and I've talked about this on a number of different shows, that there was more weakness in the labor markets than the statistics were indicating. But because of that, because of the shrinking number of people that are getting new jobs, because of the number of companies that are looking at layoffs, the Fed definitely feels that this is a time where there's a greater risk of higher unemployment than there is to higher inflation. So we're definitely focused on employment numbers right now, and the softness is something that really does concern the Federal Reserve.
But the wage increase, the percentage of the wage increase, is not keeping up with the percentage of inflation, right?
It depends.
That's true. I mean, some sectors they have
some
and others
people,
haven't.
Yes, some
again.
People are doing well. Some people are losing. You know, if you're locked into a contract, you can end up stuck for quite a while. If you're not, or if you're in an area where you have a surplus of labor, you may not be getting wage increases. On the other hand, if you have an in-demand skill, you can see your pay going up faster than inflation. So there really is a mix around the country. It just depends on what market you're in. The other thing is, if you're in a shrinking state or city, wages tend to be stagnant or decline. If you're in a growing city, you have more demand for construction, more demand for everything, and that tends to push wages up a bit.
I saw a report somewhere where the, you know, food service, hospitality industry wages, the wage index was growing faster than the inflation index, which should bode well for New Orleans, right?
Yeah, because we're definitely a hospitality business. We're going to have two wonderful opportunities to showcase ourselves. We've got the Taylor Swift concerts, which are a big, big economic deal. That should fill all the hotels, restaurants, and bars. And then the Super Bowl, and to the extent that those do, and to the extent that we're able to bump wages for the servers and all the people in the hospitality industry. That's a great thing for New Orleans and something that I think will happen over the next, 4 to 6 months.
Let's talk about the state of Louisiana. There was a recent report by the Tax Foundation that came out that said that we continue to lose population in the state, and that our gross income numbers are on the slide as well, which is kind of interesting because most of the other southern and southeastern states have shown gains. This continues to be a problem for Louisiana, right?
Oh, absolutely. We're the only southern state that's shrinking. Last year, we lost 11,000 people. By contrast, Florida is gaining 1,000 a day. I mean, think about that, 1,000 per day.
Yeah.
Texas, a similar number. And so what we have are really thriving states, and then a state that has all the potential in the world but is really not living up to its potential. I'm guardedly optimistic. I think we're making some changes. We have a lot of things that put us behind. We just went through the Francine thing. The weather is a challenge. People are reluctant to locate in a storm area, but that hasn't stopped Florida from growing. The other thing is our tax system is really a mess. We collect, and when the Tax Foundation looks at it, we're right in the middle of the states, somewhere in the high 20s, not too high, not too low, but we look expensive. And we look expensive because we have a high sales tax and a high income tax. And so when people are looking at a state like Texas with a zero or Florida with a zero income tax, they look cheaper. But when you look at their collections as a percent of the state GDP, they're about the same as ours. So they're collecting the same money, but in a more transparent way. And if we can get to a cleaner, simpler system, eliminate all the exemptions on the sales tax and then lower the rate, get to a higher property tax and then a lower income tax, if not a zero tax, I think that would help a lot because those are challenges that really are difficult to overcome, and it's been tough for the economic development folks to lure people because of that.
Did you say from an expense side that we are similar to other states? Because it seems to me if we go to a 0% or no state income taxes, we have to cut the size of state government, right?
Well, we have several areas in state government that are inefficient, and DOTD is probably the worst. You have an awful lot of folks there, and it's not productive compared to other states. If you compare, miles of road completed compared to workers and salaries, we're way at the low end of productivity. So there is room for some cuts and some efficiency in state government. And then what Texas has done is they've gone to a higher income tax, and that, I mean, not higher income, a higher real estate tax and property tax. So there is a way to do it. You have to shuffle it a bit. There's no magic way of saying we're just going to cut this and have no change. One of the challenges, too, is the way we've set up our legislature is there's very little flexibility for elected officials, and they end up stuck having to cut health care and education because everything else is in a dedicated fund and constitutionally protected. And one of the things that would really be helpful is if we would go back to a system and say, look, we're undedicating the funds. We're going to let the legislature do what we hire them to do. We get to vote on them every few years. It's their job to allocate money. But because they're handcuffed, we end up cutting things that are very, very detrimental to the state. Sometimes we'll cut education, and that really hurts because if you don't have an educated workforce, you can't compete. And then the other counterproductive cut is sometimes we'll cut at health care and lose the federal match. So we're literally losing $2 for one in order to balance a budget that's gotten out of control. And a lot of that goes back to excessive dedications. And that goes back to the days when, voters just didn't trust the legislators. And I think we, We have to give them a little more credit. You know, most of them have their state's best interests at heart, and let them have a little more control so that they can do what's in the best interest of the state.
It seems as though the pressure is going to be mounting on them as well, because recently a number of federal elected leaders, congressional leaders and alike have been sending the message to the states, you need to stop coming up here begging for money because there is none. You know, when we talk about the debt that we have now, I think it's right at $36 trillion and growing, that they just can't continue to keep, they just can't continue to fund the desires of state government.
No, you're exactly right. And unfortunately, we're in a very difficult situation because the debt is bigger this year. The deficit is bigger this year than it was last. And there are really no plans to deal with it from either party. And there are no plans to deal with Social Security. And we're in campaign season. And in the campaign season, each party is sort of trying to outbid the other on what they're going to do and how they're going to give some freebie or some benefit to different groups of folks. And neither side wants to talk about the fact that we're spending 27% of GDP and collecting about 19. And we just can't do that forever. It will come to an end. It'll come to an ugly end, either with inflation or very high taxes or a big cut in spending.
You know, there's been a lot of chatter about giving away money and a lot of chatter about not collecting taxes on income earned. I mean, you know, the most recent former President Donald Trump talking about not taxing Social Security sounds really good to me at age 66, but I'm not sure how the country affords that.
Yeah, and that's part of the problem. All of these things poll well. Not taxing Social Security will get over 50% of the people say that's a great idea. And I understand, I really do, but you also need to balance that with, if we don't do that, then we have to either tax something else or cut some spending. And when you start making it a choice and having a decision, then it becomes a different discussion. Because right now it's, you know, which one of the free toys in the basket do you want to take home? And there is no rationing. There is no there's no fiscal discipline. Now, eventually, fiscal discipline will come by the markets. But when that happens, it can be really ugly, and that could result in inflation and interest rates going right back up. You know, we're talking about rates going down. If people lose confidence in our ability to manage the debt, rates will go up, and there will be nothing the Fed can do about it.
Guy, but don't we get the sense, I mean, I get the sense that the federal government is probably, if we cut 30% of the federal government from an employment standpoint, and I know we can't do this, but just for argument's sake, next year, I don't know that we would miss a blip, quite frankly. I mean, it's kind of mind-boggling to me how large that we've got, how many new agencies have been created. You know, the regulatory side in this country has run amok. You know, you can't move a rock that's 18 inches in diameter from the bank of a stream without getting a permit. I mean, it's almost to the point of being ridiculous these days. And it just seems to get larger and larger and larger. Let's pick up the conversation there. We got to get to a break. We'll start there when we come back. 504-260-1870 on the Open Heart Jewelers Talk and Text line. We're visiting with Guy Williams, President, Gulf Coast Bank and Trust. We'll be right back, folks. Stay with us.
What's better than watching your team win? Winning money while you do it. I'm Jim Costa, and on Cash the Ticket, Mike Valeni and I give you the edge to make every game playable. College football, NFL, we're breaking it all down game by game. Your podcast feed is going to be filled, and you're going to love it. You can click on the games you care about. We do it all. With our analysis, we're finding games that other people aren't talking about. We're turning every Saturday and every Sunday into days where you got a chance to win. Don't just sit on the sidelines. Cash the Ticket with us. Follow Cash the Ticket in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.